This episode is brought to you by Windrose Recovery, a family of premier addiction treatment programs in southeastern Wisconsin. Privately owned, Windrose Recovery offers a full continuum of personalized care for those struggling with addiction, including the Manor for residential treatment, Midwest Detox for inpatient detoxification, and Windrose Counseling for outpatient treatment. With highly personalized treatment focused on trauma, Dr. Chantal Thomas and her expert team offer an authentic experience, creating the kind of deep emotional change that's crucial for long-term recovery. If you or someone you love is struggling with addiction, call Windrose Recovery at 414-409-5300. You can learn more about Windrose Recovery by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting WindroseRecovery.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I'm Dimple Thakra, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
In the Santa Monica Mountains, Her Escape Vortex offers a unique and truly fantastic setting for your next spiritual retreat. The Lavender Garden, the fire pit overlooking the Topanga Canyon sunset, and the Moroccan-furnished yurt on this magical property provide the atmosphere for an inspiring and transformative experience. A sacred place ideal for yoga and wellness retreats, as well as cleansing and healing ceremony of all kinds, Her Escape Vortex is part of a community of people eager for personal and spiritual growth. Visit thepathtoauthenticity.com/her-escape-vortex or click on the link in the show notes for more information. If this is your first time here, thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity. Episode 128 for June 15th, 2021, features a conversation with a woman named Dimple Thakrar, who is an executive relationship coach. She's got a really interesting story. We met on Clubhouse, which I've been talking about a lot lately. If you're interested in checking out Clubhouse, there's a link in the show notes. So there's a Path to Authenticity Club on Clubhouse, which is where I did this interview. It was broadcast live on Clubhouse, had a few listeners, but I've been doing that where I can, interviewing people on that platform. I did one earlier today as I record this. I've done a number of them now. And with each one I've done, more people have listened. The past couple I've done, I opened the stage at the end of the interview. People asked questions. Just seems like a good way to use this content. So I'm really excited about this episode. I think you're going to love it. Dimple's someone who I really appreciate having in my life. She's just an incredible woman. So the unedited interview for this episode was available to the Patreon community on May 20th, which is the day that I did it. The finished episode is made available to the Patreon community on June 12th. And of course, all the new episodes of the podcast, as soon as they're completed, I upload them to Patreon. Every Saturday, I do a little update, just kind of talk about what I have going on. Sometimes I'll do a reading, usually something related to what I'm reading at the time. Once in a while, I might even share some music. So I do that every Saturday. So it's a little bit of an inside look to what I'm doing and what's going on with the podcast. And supporting the show on Patreon thus far has enabled me to buy better equipment. I'm eventually going to make some swag. I have some ideas for t-shirts, that kind of thing. But if you really enjoy the show and you're interested in supplemental content, for as little as $1 a month, you can become part of the Patreon community. And it really means a lot to me. Every little bit of support helps me to do more of this, which is what I really love. So I just wanted to put that out there to you all. There's a link in the show notes, or you can visit patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity to find out more. But for now, I hope you enjoy this episode. Dimple Thakra. So, where to start with you, Dimple? I'm not even sure, but when I first encountered you, it was in a room on Clubhouse, and I'm not entirely sure what the topic was. It was a manhood-related topic, and it was, for me, early on a Sunday morning. This room I'd never been in, and I had been sort of longing to talk about this part of my life on Clubhouse and find the right place to do it. And I really just went there. You know, I got passionate about what I was talking about. It was something like, is it okay for men to cheat or something like that? And I just, you know, kind of poured my heart out, and then you jumped in and just, I guess, praised me. And then you messaged me on Instagram, and I guess it just was timely.
Yeah.
And it was also timely because of this, because you're not just any human being.
Bless you.
No, and here's how I categorize you in my world. There aren't very many of you, but, you know, you're this person who is just beautiful in every imaginable way. Your eyes radiate love. You're just one of these people who you can tell she's really done the work, to the point where when we've done that, we cross this threshold where we become just so generally attractive to people. We draw people in with the love that radiates from us. And I don't know if anyone experiences that way, me that way, but if there's a goal that I have in life, it's to get there probably, you know? So it meant a lot to me to have you reach out to me and want to connect. And we immediately started to talk about doing this. And then now a couple weeks have gone by. We just did a room together yesterday. And I was on an emotional high from that for hours.
Me too.
And still just kind of can't believe it. So
it was so good, right? It's like a drug. It was so good.
Yeah, it really was. So why don't you tell everybody who you are and what you do?
Oh, thanks, Tom. I remember us meeting the first time we met, and blown away by your authenticity and blown away by the fact that you literally speak from the heart, and it's very rare to find a man who can do that so freely in the way you do. So, I want to thank you, because the room yesterday was your idea, and it just was magic. The combination of the chemistry of our energy together, the room title, we had men speak from their hearts and touch people in a way that I've never experienced before. So I want to, acknowledge you for that. It was brilliant. So, a little bit about me. So my name's Dimple Thakra, and I've been coaching now for about 25 years. On various things, but the thread throughout all of my coaching has been relationships. And it started off with relationships with food, and then went on to relationships with self and now intimate relationships, and primarily working with men. And the reason I work primarily with men and then their partners and their children and anybody else that relates to them or with them is because I realized that through most of my life, I'd had an absolute love-hate relationship with men. And I guess it stems from my dad and the abusive household that we grew up in. And then marrying the love of my life, when I look back, all my old childhood wounds that I hadn't healed presented in our marriage. And it's only through healing that and having a huge awakening with an intervention with Tony Robbins, a two-hour intervention, that I realized that not all men are out to get me. And most of them are actually, it's the opposite. They're put on this earth to protect. And their primary goal is not to attack, but to actually really protect and provide and love on us. And the very thing that I had searched for and desired, like, was right in front of my nose, and I hadn't realized for 20 years, right in front of my nose. And it's only when I had that breakthrough moment that I was like, do you ever have that where you're searching for something, constantly searching, and then there's two things that happen. Either you're fortunate enough that somebody literally stops you in your tracks and goes, wake up. And you do, right? Or you lose them and you realize when it's too late, right? And the third thing, one that's coming to mind, is, oh, you lose yourself in the search for it.
Yeah.
And right? And I was very lucky that, number one, my man was so in love and invested in our relationship that he was prepared to go the whole way, whatever it takes. And number two, that I was gifted that awakening and had the whereabouts to actually follow my intuition and invest in a huge amount of investment that I didn't have the funds for because my instinct said yes. Right? And then to actually have the courage to wake up. So I've gone from a man-hater to somebody who absolutely is driven. My mission is to support men so that we can have incredible role models for our children. That's selfishly, it's for our kids and it's for the women in the world. If they can have incredible men that will be firm and hold them safely, then I firmly believe the world will be a better place. And so that's the reason, that's my mission, that's what I do. I support super successful executives, entrepreneurs who are successful in business, and I support them to become equally, if not more, successful in love and life. So that's what I do.
Wow, that's beautiful. It is. So that Tony Robbins, that was him saying, wake up to you. That's what happened.
Yeah. And that was, I can speak to that. So I've been married to the love of my life, been with him now 31 years. And it was around about year 10 of our marriage, things weren't good. And it was a time when we'd had the children, and he was basically serial entrepreneur, was in this life cycle of the night where he was going out and basically figuring out who he was and what, how he was going to provide for these mouths, to feed these mouths. We'd just had our first daughter, and I was pregnant with our second. And so he was frantically trying to provide. I was the main breadwinner and he was building his business. And we just, the shift in the masculine and the feminine energy meant that we were depolarizing each other. He was remaining in his masculine. I was rising in my masculine. And so we fought like cat and dog, and it continued until he surrendered and dropped into his inauthentic feminine, and I remained in my inauthentic masculine. And we decided that we loved each other, but it wasn't enough. And on our 20th wedding anniversary, we planned our divorce for our 25th, like literally a divorce pact. Yeah. Like, because at this point, he was successful. Like, the tables had turned. He was earning more than me. I'd gone into part-time work and developing my business on the side. And we just were exhausted, you know. The two of us were just sick of fighting. So we'd got to that place of silence and past assault and functional sex. And, you know, we were like, right, okay, well, this is a bit like a business strategy. We were planning the exit. All the finances and everything, and the kids would be old enough. And the usual story, right? Waiting till your kids get old enough to understand. And the truth is they'd always understood that the energy and the vibe wasn't right. Mm-hmm. And by some divine intervention, I got introduced to Tony Robbins from a business coach, because I'd just literally left my security blanket of a job and gone full-time into my business, my coaching business. And because I'd run both parallel for a long time. And this business coach said, have you heard of this guy, Tony Robbins? Because in England, he's not as popular as in the US,
right,
especially at that time. And I said, no. And I checked him out on YouTube and I thought, oh, this is an interesting guy. And then he, obviously, divine timing, was in London. So I bought the best ticket in the house, because my business even then, although it was 6 months old, was doing really well. And literally that evening, I signed up for something called Platinum Partners. And Platinum Partners, for those, you know, those of you who don't know what that is, it's an elite group of people that travel the world with Tony for 12 months, going to every single one of his events, plus three extra events that he puts on. And, like, I had never traveled on my own at this point, Tom. Like, this was the first time I'd ever traveled on my own, because I'd always had the children with me or my husband. And, like, seriously, my sense of direction, like, if we go to a restaurant and I go to the bathroom, if I'm not back in 5 minutes, he sends one of the girls in to come get me, because if there's too many doors in the restroom, which usually in a ladies' restroom there is, I get lost. I can't actually get myself back out.
Oh my goodness.
Because I just, the sense of direction, right? So imagine, right, I've gone to London, which is 4 hours away from where I live, by myself, don't know anybody at this event, and I end up signing this thing. I ring my husband at midnight and say, I've done something crazy, please don't shout. Now, he doesn't shout. It's just my perception at that time.
Right?
It's knowing, looking back now, his tonality, I had associated with the tonality of my father growing up, and that put the fear of God in me, because it was dangerous, that tone. Mm-hmm. And so that whole tonality piece, right? So he doesn't shout, but that was my perception. Anyway, I said to him, I've done something crazy, please don't shout at me. And he said to me, listen, I've been traveling the world. Can you just say it? Just say it. Whatever it is, we'll deal with it. Just say it. And so I vomited out, I've joined something called Platinum Partners. And at that time, it's $75,000. Vomited it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just started, like, 6 months into my brand new business. Yes, it was doing really well, really well. But could I afford that? Not really. And this is what this beautiful man said to me. Despite knowing that we were separating, that like, you know, he's losing me. I actually, with hindsight, think, you know, he probably thought I was about to say I've had an affair, right?
Mm-hmm.
But actually, what he said to me was, do you know something, babe? 20-odd years ago, you took a job so that I could follow my desire and my purpose and build a business. And he said, the way I see this now, this is just an investment in you and your business, and we will find a way.
Mm.
And I just thought, wow, that's unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
And we did. We found a way. And the reason I wanted to be a platinum partner was because there was an event called Relationship in Maui for Platinum Partners. And it was this event that was the event that I had the hugest awakening of my life. And it was basically a two-hour event where Tony Robbins just completely tore me to pieces. He broke me down. There were people in that event that have been partners, platinum partners for 15 years, have said they've never seen Tony with such intensity. And 2 hours later, with me on my hands and knees begging for forgiveness, because I actually took my husband there because he needed fixing, right? Of course he did. Tom, yeah. I'm the coach. I'm perfect. I know it all, right?
Yeah.
He needed fixing.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what that comment reminds me of is being in a position to help people for a long time myself.
Mm-hmm.
It hit me the other night. You know, I was reaching out to some people for support. And, you know, there's an area of my life where I've been struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And it hit me, man, I really do not like being the guy who needs help. I'm used to being the one who has it together, calm and cool. And I'm, you know, I'm sharing my experience, but, you know, I'm still speaking from I'm the one who's okay place. And it can be really uncomfortable when that's what you're used to all of a sudden be the one who the tables are turned.
Yeah. Huge.
It's a, like a next level vulnerability type of thing. Yeah.
It's so profound what you're saying, Tom, because you know, when the ego's involved, it's easier to be, and it's more comfortable to be the teacher and the coach. But actually, when you flick the switch, and this is what happened with me, like I coach men and I learn. So I'm always the teacher and the student, always. Like when I come from that place of, and like I said to you earlier, just before we started this conversation, you know, I'm only one step ahead in this area.
Mm.
And sometimes I'm not even that one step ahead. Sometimes I'm so open to learning from you. Like the room that you met me in, I was moderating and I was the, in inverted commas, the expert in the room. And that whole room, I was making notes because I was learning from all the men. I was learning about their language, their tonality, the words they use. And I then spend an hour after that room reflecting on what I learned. So always a teacher and a student at the same time. And that way, when that occurs, the ego's out of the way because you get to grow. And I hear what you're saying, it's so uncomfortable. Uncomfortable, right? And I welcome that uncomfortableness because, like, that intervention, I remember It was the second day, and Tony had done a 10-hour day. He was sat at the back of the room, and there was this speaker on the screen, Esther Perel, and she's an incredible relationship guru. And I commented and to her, it was live, she was on Skype, and you know when you're in a room and you realize that you've said the wrong thing, right? And suddenly all the energy in the room just drops, like the vibe just gets really heavy. And I sat down and I remember Tony's, I felt his energy at the back of the room. He was in the, you know, the, they have like a little pit where they have all the audio sound and he was sat there with Sage watching from the screen. And I remember feeling his energy. He got up and I'm at the front of the room, 500 people in the room. My husband sat elsewhere because we've had a fight because he's wrong and I'm right. And so all day we've had a fight. Wouldn't let him sit anywhere near me. This is the first time he's ever been to a Tony Robbins event. Didn't know anybody. I was the bitch from hell and made him sit with people he didn't know. I sat at the front full of significance with my platinum partner friends. And Tony's coming down the aisle and it's literally like fee, fi, fo, fum, right? This giant is coming towards me, and as he's coming down the aisle, he bellows, "Where is Dimple?" Right? My heart is pounding, all the hairs on the back of my neck stand up, and I stand up. It's like slow-mo almost. I stand up really slowly. And as he comes towards me, all I feel is this 6'7" giant with a horse head towering over my 5'2" frame. And he literally lays into me. He is matching my energy. That's basically what he's doing. I have to say, in this whole time, there was not one moment where I felt scared. I felt completely held by his integrity. So, you know, I felt the pureness of what he was doing. And basically, that he was showing me in a physical manifestation of how powerful and strong I was wearing that masculine mask. Right? He had the power in his mature masculine to rise to my masculine, right? So he was basically, and honestly, I didn't cry. The women in the room were like, "How did you not cry?" He's screaming at you. Because I was so used to protecting myself with that masculine mask. So used to it. And here was another drop the mic kind of moment. As he started to shout at me and really be intense with me, I hadn't noticed that from out of nowhere, my beautiful man was coming down a different aisle with his chest out, making himself look as big as he possibly can, with such a fierce look on his face, and he was coming straight down that aisle. And like, it took for Tony Robbins to stop what he was doing with me, turn around. He noticed Atul coming down, and he said, "Is this the brother you're talking about? Not forgiving," because my comment was all about not forgiving, right? Because it was one point for me. See, even the expert says I don't have to forgive, right? My comment was about that. And he said, "Is this the guy you're talking about not forgiving?" He said, "I've seen more courage in him than you've ever displayed in your lifetime." And he said, he's coming down this aisle to protect you against me. Because basically Atul was coming down to take Tony down. He says, nobody speaks to my woman like that. Nobody. And he put his arm around, Tony put his arm around Atul and he said, I effing love you, brother. I effing love you for the courage and the strength. Thank you for being that kind of man, right? And the drop the mic moment, Tom, it makes me cry even now, is that I didn't notice. And if I didn't notice him that day, the very thing that I desire was to feel safe and protected by him. What if he's always been doing it and I hadn't noticed? Right? What if he's always been doing it and I haven't noticed? And that made me realize, what are we always blind to in our relationships? What are we choosing not to see? And yet it's right there in front of us. And so the intervention went on for another 2 hours. At one point, Tony asked me to get down on my hands and knees in front of 500 people and beg for forgiveness because I, you know, had demasculated, not knowing, but I had, and right. He had allowed it to happen.
Because he loved you.
Yeah, because he loved me, because he thought, because he hadn't done the work yet, that that was what would make me happy. Because the other pieces I hadn't realized, and when I heard this in this room, there were so many other women that were shocked with this, and there were so many men that were shocked that the women didn't know this. Tony asked, what do you think is the primary driver for men in their relationship? And I was like, well, it's sex. All he cares about is sex. That's all he wants. And actually, Tony said, it's actually to make you happy. He feels successful when you're happy. It's not his responsibility to make you happy. There's a clear distinction there. But when he sees you happy, he feels successful. And that for me was a, what?
Right.
Right? Like, what the effing are you talking about? That was the moment that was my awakening. That was the flick, the switch. That was the, all this time, everything he's doing is not to try and get into my knickers, but is because he wants me to be happy. Mm-hmm. And of course, sex is a huge part of our relationship, and it should be. But the primary driver is for him to make me happy. Like, seriously, if we were as women to invest as much effort and energy and time as you guys do in making you happy, like, we physically couldn't do it. The tenacity, the capacity, the energy, the focus, the drive that you guys display blows my frigging mind every day. And that was the moment when I realized it. Because the other piece is when I got down on my hands and knees and he was above me, he held my hand and he said, I can't stand above you. And he got down on his hands and knees and he looked me eye to eye and he said, I'm not above you or beneath you. He says, we're equal. And when we work as one, we're incredible. And he actually said to me, my beautiful man said to me, I am so sorry that I've allowed this to happen, that I've got you to this place that you felt so unsafe and so unprotected. And he said, that's my fault as well. And he said, I'll never ever let that happen to you again. Right? Mm-hmm. Huge. when you take accountability, when you take self-responsibility of your own actions, and therefore the impact and the feedback you get from your partner.
I just, you know, as I'm listening to you, I keep thinking, man, what a great story. And then it gets better and better and better and better and better. And part of what I take away from this is that's the kind of man I want in my life. The humility to accept responsibility. But this kind of speaks to something I've thought about a number of times throughout this conversation already. When we really are real, when we talk about the things that we're most ashamed of and we fear most, and we tell ourselves that the people we tell these things will reject us or shun us or whatever. What actually happens is that in my experience, we're almost invariably met with love.
Wow.
Because that honesty, when I'm honest with you about what hurts me or what I'm struggling with, you feel that. You feel it. And it humanizes me to you. Right? And that exchanging emotion that way, that's what intimacy is. And just to have you experienced that on full display.
Yeah.
Tony Robbins seminar. Wow. First of all, for him to walk up there.
Yeah.
The way he did.
Yeah.
And then that moment of getting down to your level. He's obviously an amazing man. And, you know, I shouldn't be surprised based on how I described you at the top of this. I mean, it only makes sense.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I received that fully, and he is. And, you know, when you say that, Tom, the sadness that occurs in my heart is that I didn't fully embrace it for nearly two decades. And I'm very grateful that there's never going to be another two decades when I miss it.
Right.
Right? We literally, last year, we celebrated our 25th wedding anniversary. We celebrated it as opposed to getting divorced.
Right.
Right? And the movie continues and the journey continues. And, you know, I loved what you said about, you know, the fear of speaking our truth on what others might say and judge. And actually the truth is that often it connects us as humans even more, right? Through love. Because for a long time, I didn't speak this story because I was scared that women would judge me on, you know, surrendering and getting on my hands and knees and asking for forgiveness in front of a man and, you know, letting the side down of the women, right? And the truth is, the number of women that have gone, oh my God, I've been doing this thinking that this is what I need to do to protect myself. Because it was interesting, the moment that mask of mine, the masculine mask, and I'm talking an energetic, metaphoric mask, was lifted, something interesting happened, because for 15 years I'd had severe neck pain and I'd had all sorts of chiropractor, physio, acupuncture, everything, and it wouldn't go. And the moment that I released energetically that heavy iron mask, that I had put on to what I thought was to protect me from the outside of being unsafe. The truth is that what I'd done was I'd built a wall up to stop me from receiving not only his love, but my own love.
Mm.
So the moment that lifted, there was something interesting that really happened. My neck pain went. Completely went. So our energetic, emotional being manifests in our physical bodies. And the other piece that happened was my heart opened wide open in readiness to receive. Because what I hadn't appreciated is the feminine is all about receiving. It's not about giving. Think like, and the masculine's about giving. Think about the, like, the physical anatomy of a man and a woman,
right?
When we have intercourse, he goes in to the woman.
Mm-hmm.
She receives from him, right? She replenishes her energy through that gift of receiving. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the whole time along in our marriage, my beautiful man, all he wanted to do was give.
Mm-hmm.
And because I put a wall up, all I was doing was, I'm sick of giving, I'm sick of making all the decisions, I'm tired of doing everything. The words, hear the words, doing, giving, these are all masculine traits.
Right.
The fear women have is surrendering.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's the very thing that when we do surrender through choice, not because we're made to, that's the power right there.
Well, and this brings to mind what you're describing, the receiving and the relation to the anatomical functions. It just reminds me, this masculine energy, feminine energy, it's all very primal. And it's not, we have not evolved beyond that. It's probably more important than ever. And, you know, I've talked about how the change that I've experienced in this part of my life is, it happened through the process of a divorce. It began there. And one of the things this reminds me of, I wish I could give a visual of this, but I'm going to try to describe it. So we got to a point where, you know, we've been talking about this for so long. I made a decision, you know, after finding some support. This is like August. I went to her and said, listen, we need to take the rest of the year and devote everything we have into saving this marriage. And we need to start by getting a new therapist because she's a therapist. I work in the helping profession as a counselor. We know all these people. So I said, you know, I don't care who it is, as long as neither of us know him or her. So you decide, and whoever you want, I'll go there. And she found a guy. And we had been to several people over the course of a number of years. But this guy got through to me about the masculinity stuff. And what he began to do is watch the interactions between us. And he would hear me when I would respond to her. And he would take his index finger and look at me. And when I was in the feminine, you know, his erect index finger would curl down. And when I was in the masculine, it would stand up straight. And guys, I'm very visual that way, you know, but I could see it and feel it then what's happening when I'm when I'm, well, I guess we can do this or whatever. Mm. Then the finger curls down. And when it was, I'm going to take care of this. I'm going to do, you know, the finger stands straight up.
Yeah.
And, oh, and again, the anatomy.
Hmm.
It's a really great analogy of what kind of energy we need to bring as men to a relationship. And with the way we are in culture now and feminism, and I think there's a misguided belief that that is no longer operative, that sort of dynamic, but it is. It is. And what I've learned is that I think there's nothing a woman hates more than a weak man.
Oh my God.
It's true, and they don't know it. And women, even the strongest of women, are starved for the man to stand up and be strong and be himself. And it's not a threat. It's like I've learned in some romantic situations where it's almost like when a woman has been, I wouldn't say mistreated me, but a little careless with me about returning calls or whatever. It's almost like she's throwing out some bait there for me to say, you know what? This is bullshit. I'm not putting up with this. And if I don't, or in the past, I would never have done something like that. And I wouldn't have her respect. And what I've learned is that I'm giving her the message that I can't protect her.
That's right.
But if I say, listen, we don't have to talk if you don't want to, you know, it's okay. But if we're going to do this, then, you know, I expect you to return my phone calls.
Yeah. This is my standard.
Right. Right. Yeah. And if you don't have that, then why would she want you?
Yeah. It's so, honestly, Tom, it's so, like, particularly powerful women desire that even more. Right? Let me say that again so that it's for the guys. Particularly powerful women desire that even more. And the protection and the providing, particularly providing, often in this decade, it's men have misunderstood that as providing financially. And with women being able to provide financially for themselves, and sometimes even more lucratively than men can in certain scenarios, what men have missed, and this is the piece that they missed, the value of providing emotional protection is far more lucrative for a woman and far more impactful for a woman than providing financial protection. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It makes sense to me. It does.
Yeah. Well, you know, I when I say it makes sense, did I explain that?
I think so.
I know. Yeah. I think so. Yeah. It's providing isn't just about providing money. So a lot of men feel a lack of confidence, a lack of self-worth if their woman provides more income in terms of money than they do. Right. And the truth is that kind of woman is not necessarily interested in your money. She's interested in whether when push comes to shove and Tony Robbins is attacking, in inverted commas, attacking his woman, is he going to come and save her from the saber-toothed tiger?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And often the attack that's occurring in a woman, the saber-toothed tiger, is not anybody else but the fight within her. Right?
Yeah.
It's the fight within her. Because often in the past, my husband's been like, what is wrong? Nobody's upset you. Why? What's going on? Like, what just happened? You were happy a minute ago.
Right.
What just happened? And now I'm able to say to him, babe, it's the demons in my head. It's the demons in my stories from the past that it's triggered. That tone that you just used with me, it is not, I know it's not your intention to trigger this. It's all, I take full responsibility, but it's triggered when my dad was beating my mom. And as a small child, that's not safe. Right? And once I was able to articulate that, he was able to say to me, oh my God, did you think that this tone meant I was about to attack you? He said, this tone that I use is because I'm passionate.
Right.
I'm passionate about what I'm saying. And just having that open conversation shifted it huge. Because I was then able to reframe it. So when he used it, I was able to go, oh, he's passionate about this, not he's about to attack me. Because I was able to heal that in an instant. And he was also able to be aware that if I'm reacting because I didn't catch it, he knew to protect me. He knew to just hold me. He knew to be that safe container for the crazy lady in that moment, right? Because the fight was within me. The dragon that he needed to slay was within me.
Wow. Man, Dimple, there's just so much I want to respond to. But the first thing I want to go back to, you mentioned that the most powerful women want this most from us, from men, to show up in our strength. And, you know, you've heard me use this expression that I've kind of come up with about how we as men emasculate ourselves. And the thing about that powerful woman needing you to show up in your strength, a man can't do that unless he's got his shit together.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And so that, if you don't, then it brings up the insecurity in you as a man, and you shrink from it and go to someone who you know will accept you the way you are.
Yeah.
And in doing so, if I do that, I'm selling myself out. I'm accepting less than I want. I'm not believing in myself that I have the ability. I mean, I'm essentially the internal experience that I have, if that's what I'm doing, is I'm a coward.
Yeah.
And you know, we have to respect ourselves first in these situations. If we can't do that, then how can we expect a partner to respect us? So, but another thing I want to go back to, you talked about you forgiving in that scenario with Tony Robbins, you forgiving. And one of the sort of lessons spiritually that I've learned over the last couple of years is when it comes to my anger or my need to forgive this stuff that I have, when I think I'm angry at you, what's really going on is I'm angry with me.
Yeah.
And when I think I need to forgive you, what I really need to do is forgive myself.
Yeah.
So in what moment when, you know, you are forgiving in that Tony Robbins scenario, at what moment, where did you forgiving yourself come in?
Yeah, great question, Tom. And it's so interesting because I didn't have the awareness and the understanding of the power of forgiveness at that point, right? And this, interesting you picked up on it, this was the piece that I was featured on Tony Robbins's podcast. It was all about forgiveness. And when I was being asked to ask Atul for forgiveness, it wasn't at that point. At that point, it was focused, I was focused on forgiving, on asking for forgiveness of him. Mm. And then after we'd done that, Tony actually did a piece on, for me, on forgiving myself. Mm. Right? And it was in that moment that I released, and it was, and actually, that's when the work started on the forgiveness. It's been a journey. Mm. I literally every day have a practice of letting go and forgiveness and acceptance every day. Mm. Every day, because something that you touched on, which was really profound, respect. How can you expect somebody else to respect you if you don't respect yourself? And this is something that I really believe, that you can't expect anybody else to be the source of anything for you. They can't be the source of love. They can't be the source of respect. Because if you, the moment you go outside of yourself for any of those validations, you set yourself up to fail. Because it's never going to be how you desire it or need it. And this is a huge piece for men, right? Respect, honor, mm-hmm. humility, right? And it's something actually that there was an interview with Tone, with Coach Guthrie, who's a rugby champion and now a coach. And I asked him a question, actually, it was in Clubhouse, and I asked him what were the three values that he would speak to his former self, right? His younger self, and what are those values that he would coach other men, younger men? And these were the three values: humility, honor, and respect. But you can't have any of those from and expect them from others unless you honor them in yourself, right? The same with love, the same with forgiveness. And I actually wrote a whole article on this, so check that out, because it was so profound, some of the things that I love listening to men. You get so many gems, because the one difference between the communication between men and women is that men speak literally. Right?
Yes, 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 yes.
You use a quarter of the words that we do to get the same message across. And it's a double-edged sword, because you speak literally, you expect us to be literal.
Right.
And you take what we say as literal.
Well, this came up in the room yesterday that yeah. about how, you know, you told your husband you didn't want him to bring you flowers anymore, when that's indirectly you were letting him know how much you appreciated it.
Yeah. That's
and
right.
I just expected him to pick up on that.
Yeah.
And you know, this is actually one of the beautiful differences between
yes.
men and women, if we can just recognize it and embrace it. But mm. what often happens is that instead we become cynical and women, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So interesting.
It fascinates me, and women do the same.
Yeah.
Well, it makes me cringe, because I used to actually say it. I used to say, I've got three children.
Oh. Did you say that in his presence? Did he
yes.
hear you say that? Oh, my
yes.
gosh.
Yes. And this is now why I do this work, because I have frigging lived the mistakes. I've witnessed the pain, and thankfully he's a very strong man, and he's done the work as a result,
yeah.
right? But there's always healing to be done, always. And you know the piece on giving and taking, and giving and receiving, should I say, giving and receiving, right? It doesn't mean to say that women should always receive and men should always give. It's a beautiful dance between the two, mm-hmm. right? This morning, I needed a cuddle, and I asked. I didn't assume. that he would know. Because that in the past has been the issue. Women think men are mind readers because women are. Right. So I ask now, I need a cuddle and I need it like this. And he's like, okay. And he gives me a cuddle.
Because he wants to be happy.
Yeah. And I received it fully. I didn't complain that it wasn't quite right or any. I just embraced the cuddle.
So many women, you know, in that situation would be angry because they had to ask.
Yes. And I was.
Like, you're supposed to read my mind. You're this will never work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you don't know, you should know, which is ridiculous.
Yeah. The number of times, Tom, that I've said, we have been together decades and you don't know me at all. What is wrong with you? I know you. I know exactly what you need. Right?
And he's like, you're not telling me.
Yeah. You don't love me because you don't know how to cuddle me and when I need it.
Yeah. Well, that goes back to just the internal struggle that's just a story we're making up in our minds.
It's a total story, but it's real, guys. Men, this is real. It really does happen for us women. It really happens. And just listening to this open conversation, I'm hoping that you can, as a couple, start to articulate your internal dialogue to each other, because just that conversation will open it up for you. Will heal, right?
Yeah.
So now me asking him, I need a cuddle, and he gave me that. I received it fully. I was full. And then what happened? He lay on my chest. Right? And I didn't need him to ask me for that because I could tell what he needed. I needed to give to him and he needed to receive and feel safe. Right?
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of the give and the receiving, giving and receiving. It's like an infinity sign. Yeah?
Yeah. So I want to go back. You talked about how in our relationships, these old wounds surface. And isn't that always the case? And for me, you know, I have a 15-year-old son. So, I mean, ultimate teacher. Every single button that exists within me. I mean, he was built to push. And so many people are reactive to that. Just the way you're talking about being reactive in a marriage when the same thing happens. You know, I mean, we're there to heal each other. That's what love is. It heals. But talk about that. You talked a little bit about your dad and talk about how that those issues began coming for you in your marriage. And at what point did you begin to see that this is me healing something from long ago?
Great question. And you know, I wanted to just add, Tom, that when you said that, you know, your son knows exactly, you know, how to push and what to push. And what came to mind when you said that was, how blessed are you? How blessed? And some people would say, what are you talking about? No, how blessed are you? Because that gives you every single opportunity to grow and expand at the deepest level. When it's your own child, you will do what it takes.
Right?
To expand. Because we have two girls and we have a 16-year-old. She's our youngest. And oh my gosh, this child, I firmly believe, is my teacher. She was sent to teach me. I am her pupil.
Right?
Because she, blows our minds with some of the things that she says. And she came home one day from school at age 15 and said, right, I'm done with school. And presented us with the options of how she was going to be schooled, the costs, and how she was going to pay for the private tutor or the online school. And really all she was asking us was consulting with us, like a business proposition, right? Consulting with us on what would be the best option, not how we're going to fund it. She was funding it herself with her own business, right? So this just goes to show that our children are our greatest teachers. So sorry, that sidetracked. So what was the question again, Tom? Please just refresh my memory.
Well, first I'm going to comment on what you just said.
Yeah.
So for me, one of the key things is what would come up for me pretty constantly until I picked up on it was he would ask to go somewhere or he would ask for something. And in my mind, I'd say, well, you need to answer it this way because your mom or dad would have answered it that way. And you don't want to be like, and not even conscious. It just happened. And in, you know, working with a therapist in describing this, one day she said to me, you know, not being them isn't the same thing as you being you. And that was, wow.
Yeah, and, exactly.
And so many of us as parents do that. But my question was, at what point in this growth as it pertains to your marriage, did you make the connection between your childhood wounds with your father and healing them with your husband?
Great question. It was the moment I forgave my father. It was the moment I energetically, I did a lot. So I'm also a theta healer. So I do a lot of spiritual energetic work. And I actually did the internal work on energetically releasing my father and forgiving him and forgiving myself for the blame that I'd put on myself for not protecting my mum. It was that moment. And in that moment, when that veil lifted, I had so much clarity on the man that I'd married. And it just so happens that this particular man, my beautiful man that I married, has been there all my life. And he has been there when he's physically protected my mum. Right? So not only do I have evidence in my own life of where he's always protected, but I have evidence of where he's protected my mum quite literally. Right? So it was literally the moment that I released. And so we talked about forgiveness. This is the power of forgiveness. It doesn't mean that I have forgotten what Dad did. And also I realized that he was a product of his upbringing. Right? That was just the way it was in the Indian culture. And his mum was a very strong woman who he didn't have the insight or the maturity to stand up for himself, let alone my mum. My grandma was a powerhouse, but not in a healthy way.
Yeah.
And she influenced, and actually my mum, because when I look back now, my mum was a paranoid schizophrenic, so she was diagnosed. But the truth is, I believe she was so spiritually connected that she lived on different planes to keep herself safe.
Man, I love talking to you.
I love talking to you as well. There's so much, right?
Yeah,
You bring out so much. I'm a responsive. So if I'm activated by somebody incredible like yourself, then like stuff just comes out, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, this is a part of myself that, you know, I can be so unaware of. And part of it is that I never want to be presumptuous about myself. But you know, I'm the guy. I haven't had a drink in almost 25 years. That's where my healing journey began, when I stopped drinking at 23 years old.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And now, you know, where I was the guy at the party who was passing out on your couch or, you know, falling all over or whatever. Now I'm the guy who is off in the corner with whoever in the room is in the midst of an existential crisis, and they just find me and they're talking to me about their wounds. You know, it just happens. It just happens. And as it pertains to this podcast, you know, I've been in this position for years where I've been working with families and people around addiction and, you know, intervening and doing something about it and being the person they come to for help. And, you know, I have this, I think I started to notice it maybe 15 years ago. People used to say to me, you know, you're really calm. You just have this calming presence. And people talk to me. People tell me stuff. They feel safe talking to me about what's going on with them. And I guess, no, they won't be judged. And then when I start doing this podcast, I mean, it's just, it feels exactly the way it feels when I'm sitting down with someone who's struggling and comes to me. It just feels the same way.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it, we need all of it. You know, we need all these life experiences. And when you talked about how you went through that 20 years, that you would, you know, never want to go through again, but I bet you also realized that you needed to experience that to be able to experience what you're in now as fully as you are.
Yeah. 100 and a trillion percent. I would never turn back the clock, because I believe that my soul resides in this body and chose those parents and chose this life to learn these lessons and then to pass them on. My human design is very much that. And it's very much around, you know, if you don't know what human design is, please Google it. It's incredible. But my human design is very much, I have to have gone through it in order to teach it. So my first book is called Your Food Freedom, and that's all about a beautiful relationship with food. And the reason I did that was because I was anorexic as a child, and I nearly lost my life to anorexia. Like, there was a point where if I had a choice, I either go down the road of self-destruct and press that button. I was half the body weight that I am now. I'd stunted my growth. My organs were shutting everything. And, or I go down the path of finding the truth about nutrition. And I chose that because there was a voice inside of me. I remember the day distinctively. I was 13 years old. I was at the doctor's surgery, and I remember the day, and he said, you have to eat, Dimple. And I remember there was a voice inside of me that said, now is not your time to go. You have more to do, right? So I healed myself through that, helped other people with it, developed a model, wrote the book. The next thing I did was about spiritual awakening. That's my second book. This third book I'm writing is all about how men can get the roadmap to their purpose, right? Because I've lived through it with a man.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and you're walking other men through it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Tom, you are so good at extracting the key elements of somebody's soul. You're so good at hearing the unspoken word. It's just magnificent. Your skill on that is just incredible.
Thank you.
You fine-tune that. I sense that. It's something that you've literally, like a beautiful piano, you've fine-tuned it, right? And you pick up those notes. It's beautiful. Thank you.
Well, thank you for saying that. And if I have fine-tuned it, I did it unknowingly. I must have, I suppose. Yeah. But
yeah, all the nuances you've, and that's why I'm feeding it back to you. You know, just to like raise your awareness of it, that you do you, and to raise your consciousness of it, that you're really good at picking up the unspoken word, really good at it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So one of the things I want to touch on here is, you know, from the beginning, I talked to you about how, you know, just witnessing the love that you radiate. And I'm trying to think of where exactly it came up, where I wanted to bring this into the conversation, but one of the realizations that I have come to over the last few years, and I'm just interested in what you have to say about this. The love you were talking about, if whenever we go outward for something we need that, you know, we already have it. I think about, you know, one person comes to mind in particular, how much I loved her.
Mm.
And you know, the power of that, you know, that kind of love, it gives us energy and it's such a force.
Mm.
But to come to the conclusion finally that person didn't give that to me. It was already there.
Mm.
It was already there. We already have it.
Yeah.
We already have it. And the people that we love, it's just like it's where we want to channel it. But that's not the only place to channel it. And it's not probably not even the most important place to channel it is to ourselves. And then if we do that, then we have Dimple, who you look in her eyes and it's just a beacon drawing people in with her love. You know, that's it just expands, right?
Oh, thank you, Tom. Mm. I honestly receiving that. And this is something else that I've learned to receive, to actually say, thank you, I'm receiving that fully. Mm. Because, you know, when somebody gives you a gift and you say, oh, no, don't be silly, it's not me. It's just, you know, everybody's like that, right? Like, what does it feel like when somebody gives you a gift and they knock it back?
Well, and this, it reminds me of, I don't know if you've read any Thomas Merton.
No, I haven't.
Well, he was a Trappist monk, you know, Catholic priest who studied in the East a lot. So he kind of weaved together a lot of Eastern thought with Catholicism and Christianity.
Right.
And he wrote a book called No Man Is an Island. And in the very beginning of it, one of the things he talks about is how love has, when it's received and accepted, it grows. Mm. But when we say, oh, no, you know, can't receive a compliment. Well, no, I don't. I just did that. Or instead of saying thank you and I fully receive it like you are.
Yeah.
When you do that, it gets bigger.
Yeah.
It gets bigger. Yeah. But when you push it away, it, you know, and it's something I've experienced a lot in familial relationships where, man, all I wanted to do was love my older brother.
Yeah.
And he just blocked it and blocked it and blocked it. And it hurt so much. And it wasn't even that he wasn't giving love back that hurt. What hurt is that he wouldn't accept the love that I was giving him.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he didn't know how. He probably didn't even realize he was doing that.
Yeah.
He just, you know, men, this is a big thing for men, accepting compliments.
Yeah.
You know, fully accepting them. And without, you know, often they're like, they won't even acknowledge them, never mind accept them. They brush past them.
Right. And pretend they didn't even happen.
Yeah. Pretend they didn't even happen. And I loved what you'd said about receiving love, because I firmly believe, and I use this analogy a lot, that You know, often we give love from a place of depletion. So we're giving it from our reserves. You know, if you think about like a fuel tank, mm-hmm. like if it's on half and you're giving fuel out from there, then that vehicle is going to get depleted eventually. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you filled your love tank up so full from the abundance of love that's in the universe that is just there, mm-hmm. if you believe that love is all around us and it's just there waiting for you to absorb it and receive it, just waiting, right? Mm-hmm. That when you fill your love tank up so full and then you give from the overflow of that tank, you don't feel resentment. You feel energized.
Right.
Right? Because it's the surplus. And in doing that, the only way you can get surplus love and fill your tank up is to receive it first.
Right.
You have to receive it in order to give it. Yeah. It's just as simple as that. And when it's interesting, you know, you talk about the love in my eyes. This was the piece. When I learned this, when I learned that I had to receive first, because my desire to give was so big that I ended up feeling depleted, resentful, and my physical body suffered, right?
Yeah, when pain in the neck.
That pain in, literally, the pain in the neck.
Right.
The moment I learned to receive, and this was something Tony mentioned in the intervention, he said, the only reason, Dimple, I'm spending 2 hours with you, this amount of time with you, as he said, because both your beautiful man and I can see the love in your heart that you can't see.
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
Wow. To have Tony Robbins say that to you.
Yeah.
Well, it just speaks to me what a powerful force that you are.
Oh, gosh.
To have someone of his stature and ability to look at you and say that, it had to be so validating for you and empowering for you to hear that from him, right?
Huge. I mean, to the point where all this detail, I mean, this intervention, I think, was now 3-4 years ago. And I remember it like it was yesterday. Like, huge. When he said that, it gave me permission to love me. It gave me permission to actually go, huh?
Yeah.
Does he actually see that? Like, I felt it for a long time, but I was too scared. What if people judge me?
Right.
What if people really see the truth? What if people think, particularly strong executives, what if they think that I'm a bit of a wuss because I lead with love?
Right.
And the truth of the matter is every single human being on this planet wants love.
Well,
and
there's
love.
Not a more powerful force.
Yeah.
It's definitely, this comes up for me when, in relation to kindness, when in America, you know, there's this assumption that if we do good, if we help the poor or, you know, that, you know, we're, well, you know, they should be able to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. And well, what about kindness?
Yeah.
Right. What about that? When, you know, if to be kind, it actually, like he was kind to you in that moment, reflecting your love back to you, it empowered you. And that's what it does. And it's that love. It's giving love. Which for me, I just reached a conclusion a few years ago that, you know, I live in a place where I live in South Florida. I grew up in the Midwest, and I don't know how much time you spent in the States, but the Midwest, I mean, people are friendly and reliable, and it's just a different vibe. And where I live now, there are a lot of people who come from other places, and there's not as much of a feel of community. And you go through life, there's not a lot of eye contact. There's not a lot of hello, how are you? I mean, I live in a high rise where, you know, the first couple of years I was here, I mean, people, you know, never say hello, just end up in the same people practically with the elevator every day. And, and it just hit me, you know, I don't want to live like that. I'm not going to do that. So I don't give a shit whether they say hello or not. I'm saying hello.
Yeah.
And if I have an opportunity to help someone, I'm going to do it. And, and then that, just the whole life experience shift that takes place when you decide that, it's just a whole world of difference.
Oh, yeah. And it all stems from deciding that this is your standard. You don't have to have the same standard as everybody else. I remember doing an experiment actually in London on the tube. And I said, I woke up that day and I'm not from London. I'm like from the north of England, Manchester, where we all say hello and it's very friendly. You go to London and like nobody makes eye contact because they're too scared of what they might think if I'm a weirdo or whatever, right? And I decided that day, and both my sisters are from London and they couldn't believe I did this because they're like, only you would do this, Dimple. I decided that day, this was before the masks, that I was going to spend the day smiling at as many people as I could possibly smile to, right? What a difference that whole day. There was so much kindness as a result of that. People were helping me with my bags. They were complimenting me, saying, you've made my day with that smile. Thank you. I had eye contact and like, people's face literally lit up.
Right?
In the gift of a smile.
Yeah. Well, and it begins with the intention of, you know, coming from a place of love rather than fear. That's what it is, right? I mean, oh, man, I could just go on and on like this with you forever. You're like, you know.
We'll have to do it again, Tom.
I would love that. So, I mean, you're definitely part of my you're my people, you know, and I'm so glad that we crossed paths and I'm excited about what we're going to do together in these rooms. It's just, so invigorating and exciting to even think about. So looking back, I mean, I know we've covered a lot, but there's so much more I want to know about you, to be honest. And I just appreciate you welcoming me into your world like this and sharing this with me, taking part in this. But looking back over your life, if there was a time when the younger Dimple most needed a word of encouragement or advice or support, when would that have been? And what would you go back and say to her?
Gosh, it would have been when I was 13. It's a great question. And I know exactly. When I was 13, it would have been trust her. She knows, and trust that it's okay to love her. That's what I would have said to her. I would have said, just trust yourself. It's okay. You know, trust your instinct and it's safe to love yourself. That's what I would have said to her. And it would have changed everything. And also I'm okay that I didn't have that opportunity because I'm the woman I am today and I have the scars and the wounds and the healing because of it. So, yeah. But trust and love are the two words.
I love that. This has been great. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this with me. And I just look forward to being in your world.
Oh, thank you, Tom. And I am so grateful to have this opportunity to record this podcast with you today. And I'm excited for the future and how this, you know, if this just touches one person's life and it saves one relationship, then our work here is done, you know?
Yeah, that's all that really matters. And that's that's a principle that I've lived by for, well, in these moments, I think when I'm putting myself out there, even if it's sharing in a room, or that's the conviction I have. It's not about me. If I can, if something I say helps one person, that's all that matters.
Exactly.
That's why we're here.
Power of one. Power of one.
Right. Well, thank you, Dimple.
Thanks, Tom. Take care.
Authenticity proudly supports the iSpeak Media Foundation, advancing media literacy education through an evolving series of outreach programs within the communities that need it most. For more information, visit iSpeakMedia.org. All right, there you have it, Dimple Thakrar. You can learn more about Dimple in the show notes. Please check out the website, thepathtoauthenticity.com. Got all sorts of stuff there, doing more all the time. There you can find links to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Also have a couple nice players where you can listen to the audio right on the website. So if you enjoyed it, please share this episode with a friend. It's very easy to do that on the website as well. You might even leave a rating or a review at Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, wherever you listen. If you have questions or comments, call 561-247-4757. Leave a message. I'd love to hear from you. Value any feedback you have to offer. At the beginning of the show, I talked to you about Patreon. You can learn more about Patreon through the link in the show notes. I want to thank the band Punk Rock Opera, whose music you hear throughout the show. Their songs are used with permission from the artist and under a Creative Commons license. Thank you to our sponsors, The Manor and Windrose Recovery, as well as Her Escape Vortex. Thank you to Wendy Chin at Equivox. And The Path to Authenticity is proud to support the iSpeak Media Foundation. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, both at The Path to Authenticity. Also have some Spotify playlists. For all of these, I've included links in the show notes. So thanks again for listening. Thank you to Dimple. Hope you guys loved it as much as I did. Have a great week. Be nice.
Why my dad We need a guitar player.
This episode was brought to you by Equivox. For digital marketing or web design services, visit Equivox.com.